the mindset of less noise and more signal, and really taking a step back and focusing on where the value add is, which is the signals we should be reacting to.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. From your perspective, when it comes to getting stuff done, we all have far more than we can get done in any 24-hour period. So for you, what does it mean to get stuff done, and how do you go about doing it?
Oh, yeah, I think it is definitely varied. I think you can tailor it for different people, different environments, different cultures. But I think what resonates with me is the mindset of less noise and more signal, and really taking a step back and focusing on where the value add is, which is the signals we should be reacting to. And I think that is difficult in a world where we are constantly bombarded with signals, and you know, figuring out what is noise and what is signal. But I think it stays true to who you are, what your direction of travel is, what that horizon looks like, and that helps you make those choices. And then it's staying true to it, which is also the challenge. It's then
another challenge. Yeah,
it's then knowing what those signals are, leaning into them, and maintaining your course, and really pushing away the noise. So less noise, more signals at the highest level is probably what I'd lean into.
I'm curious whether this, first of all, the recognition of the difference between noise and signal is something that was kind of evident for you from early on in your career, or was it something that there a moment where you kind of saw that, well, there needs to be a better way to approach these things, or was it something that was actually taught to you, like, and you actually literally received that kind of advice and went on accordingly? I'm curious about how you came to be in this level of awareness.
I think it goes right back to childhood, if I'm really on it and really reflecting.
Okay.
I mean, I grew up in a quite noisy, chaotic environment as a youngster. I mean, I'm a middle child, for one, so there's three of us. You know, that's noisy as siblings. And we were quite a transient family. We moved around a lot. We had financial challenges and, you know, and noise and change and those sorts of things. So kind of observing my parents kind of reacting, but also being proactive in selecting the things that they could actually control and influence, and some things that they just couldn't, I guess at the time was a significant input. But it really took me probably post late teenage years, because I was pretty destructive in my late teenage years. I found life quite challenging, probably from that, you know, it is trauma at the end of the day, you know, growing up and reflecting on it. So my early 20s, I did have a bit of counseling, a bit of coaching support. And I think that process helped me understand that actually this is a strength, not a weakness. We can use this in my professional career. And I think I've always kind of just compounded that layering of experiences as I've gone through different career choices, different jobs, different works that I've lived and worked in a few different countries. And I think that's definitely helped. I think it goes right back, and then it's the process of reflection and self-awareness, and then the compounding of the good habits and the good behaviors we'd want to see.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think everybody experiences a lot, and like you said, these days we're bombarded, so we're getting all that noise. But how do you approach that? How do you kind of interpret that and then go from there? Like, is it a source of learning to understand that, you know, we're in this situation, how can we do it better? Or next time, if we're in a similar situation, what can we do differently? I think is where we can all kind of advance. And I think to a certain extent, just over time, we accrue that, and that becomes a source of wisdom. But also
we can proactively accelerate that if we are a bit more reflective. So yeah, it sounds like you had a bit of both going through that. Now, in terms of when things go off, like in terms of not then, you know, I don't know whether I can say interpreting the signals wrong, perhaps, or things, you know, just a miscommunication along the way, or you know, to people just coming from a totally different perspective. How do you go about bridging those?
Yeah, well, I think the reality is it happens more than we would want it to. This kind of, you know, slightly off target or something like that. And I think.
Sorry, you mean that gap is bigger than we realize?
I think it probably is. Yeah. If I'm reflecting on it with some clarity, I think the course direction and the selecting noise versus signal, I suspect we get it wrong more than we would want to. I think the reality is that's the reality. And I think what helps us in that process is the padding of the brakes and then looking back to look forward and knowing with clarity what's the outcome we're trying to observe, because then we can evidence whether it's worked or it hasn't. And then it's about being comfortable that it's okay that we just might have picked up the wrong signal at that moment, and then going through the process of reflection. So I think it's like a flywheel for me. It's kind of observe a signal, like unpack it, define it, you know, kind of really define it, agree an action, do it, and then but pause, look back, what was the outcome? Is it a signal that matters? And if it is, you keep that process going. If it isn't, you have choice. Do you kill it? So it's just not relevant anymore. So we kill it. Or does it need iterating? Does it need, you know, a pivot? Does it need a change? And then you can keep going in. But I think it probably happens more than we would like to admit. And the reality is, I think that's okay, actually. I think that's okay.
Yeah.
Because we are in a process of learning. What we were talking just before we started, change is the new norm, right? So I think it's okay. But it's having the tools and the mindset that it's okay. And you solve for it by having the reflective, retrospective moments.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point. And I think that sometimes it blindsides us. Like all of a sudden, that realization comes that you've been going on this kind of course, thinking that everything's cool, everything's great, everyone's on the same page. And then you suddenly just find out unexpectedly that it's like that. And other times you have a kind of early warning sign or some kind of signal. Sometimes it's very tangible, or sometimes it's just a feeling, and you feel that something's not quite right, but you don't have necessarily enough to go on to maybe initiate anything. You want to just monitor it. Your senses are awake that you want to, and then down the line, and both obviously, you know, it's you know, obviously coming to those realizations sooner the better, obviously, but also, you know, definitely even when we're aware of something, we have to take each case on its individual status as to whether we immediately action anything or not, and just kind of monitor it, because sometimes, of course, we feel that and it does resolve itself and no action needs to be taken. So
I love that, Gordon. The feeling thing's really, I do love that.
Hey everybody, Gordon here. Just stepping in right now just to give a quick message about the Get Stuff Done podcast, which up until now have completely been self-funded. It's been supported by RDI Worldwide, who are the leaders in recruitment for global companies based in Korea who want to hire bilingual talents. But your support would be really, really appreciated. First of all, you can do that for free by subscribing to this podcast and sharing it with your network and others. But also, if you would like to actually check out our merch, we have launched some Get Stuff Done products. You can find these on the link tree on the social media channels, and check out the Get Stuff Done baseball caps, t-shirts, and other great little products. Hope you like, and if you have any other suggestions for things you would like to see in the Get Stuff Done range, then let me know. Thank you.
I think business should become more feely. We often try to remove that in our processes. Oh no, it needs, don't go from your gut, all these, but I think there is
data.
It's a really good point. You've really got me thinking about it. I think all feelings are valid, but the way we behave because of those feelings are not, so they're not all valid. So I think that's where, like, I can feel something. So something feels off. Right. My behavior should be pause, reflect, think about it, then use the data to either validate or not. And then we make some choices and decisions. But I think it's the reaction to the feeling, just being reactive or just feeling everything and then go. I think that's the bit that you've really touched on that I really like. It's we've got to, all feelings are fine and okay and actually are very important, but all behavior is not. And I think that's the bit we've got to manage. I really like that.
The very tangible example that I have of that is when driving, you can feel all kinds of emotions induced by others, but how you react in that moment is very important, and it could be a matter of life and death. So I think that I don't know, maybe I'm a bit of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde scenario. when I'm with the kids, I keep it cool. Things happen. That person should definitely not be doing that, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. When they're not and I'm all alone, well, maybe those reactions are rather different now. So it's a funny thing.
Yeah, love it.
You mentioned that you'd also lived and spent time overseas. How were those experiences in terms of, impacting how you work and how about you go about getting things done?
Yeah, I've learned a phrase that I think has helped me reflect on that, which is this notion of cultural fluency.
Mm-hmm.
I've found, I didn't know that phrase until I'd experienced it. So as my roles have evolved, I've often had global roles, global teams. And I've found there is just a cultural need in the way we design for work and the things that we do and the things that we need to get done. How might be different. The way we label things might be different. The hierarchies and, different norms might be different, might be unique to the different areas. And I think it's less about actually, getting homogenous and getting us all behaving in the same way. I think it's actually about tailoring. I think it's actually about having a direction of travel that we all can see, but tailoring how and what and, to make it work. Because I think, and that is that cultural fluency that you get. So that's what I, in the synthesis of kind of me reflecting of working globally and living in different countries, it's definitely a thing. For me, I've found living and working harder in the country than global. So because it didn't impact me as a whole. When I had moved, I found that harder. So not only was I dealing with the nuances of cultural fluency in work, it's impacting me in life. So I definitely found it a compounding, challenging experience, moving and relocating. And for context, we spent some time in Barcelona. A few years prior to that, I spent some time in San Francisco. And they're very different. There's some commonalities actually in environment. We're not too far from the mountains to go skiing. We're by the coast, so there were some similarities. I mean, wow, chalk and cheese really in terms of culture. So I think I would encourage it massively if anybody gets the opportunity to go and experience. I think it is about the experience. It's less about the outcome. So I try to worry less about the outcome when I'm making those types of decisions. I think actually the reward is just the learning and the experience and immersing yourself in it. So I think there is a need for cultural fluency. I think as the world of work gets more global, if it isn't already, this is a discipline. It's a skill. I think it's a competence that's required of us all, is cultural fluency and this notion of tailoring.
Absolutely. Fully agree with everything you said there. I like the way you've encapsulated it with cultural fluency. And one of the go-tos that I always refer back to is Mansoor Javedan. He's a professor at Thunderbird School of Business in the US. And he came up with this global mindset concept where he divides it into these different types of skill. Starting from the person who is really, really effective, high performer in their home country is absolutely not necessarily a high performer in another country.
Right.
Because it is so much more in just getting stuff done yourself, and even getting stuff done through others in one cultural context, one cultural environment, than it is in another. And so he goes through several ways in which people can try to develop that skill, because I think you've termed it right, the skill, right? Because you can know a whole lot about a different culture, and that's helpful for providing background and cultural context and rationales and whys and whatnot. And you can know a lot about what, you know, why things are structured the way they are and why things happen. But that still isn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of can prepare you and help you to understand it more yourself. But at the same time, then it comes down to those interactions and the actual agility of going through a negotiation in a different language when it runs in a totally different timeline, relationship, basis, place. I mean, everything can be different in that sense, and so it's interesting where we see with global mobility the way in which some people very successfully develop that and go on a regular basis from place to place, and we see other cases where, you know, local organizations feel, oh, here's another overseas manager here for a short time, not worth investing. They're not going to invest significantly in us. By the time we get a year in with them, they're already, on thinking about what their next move is. And things never really develop into a fully functional relationship. So, it can be difficult. But at the same time, many organizations want to keep that yes. very global and synchronized type of culture going on. And in that case, you've got to constantly have people on rotation. So I guess it really depends on what's trying to be achieved and outcome. But I've seen both sides of that. I've seen both sides of that culturally, and I've seen both sides of that as being that person on both sides of it.
And I find we come from quite a privileged lens, us Western English native speaking. We're very, very fortunate in many respects. And I think there is a humility we have to enter other cultures with, which we're not always good at. We do have to tread more patiently. We do have to tailor ourselves, I find. And that is that cultural fluency. And we do come from a very privileged lens, I find. At times, it's not.
Yeah. You're absolutely right, because the go-to is English for that global business language. That's an advantage for us as English native speakers. Everybody else who is operating not in their native language, and we judge them accordingly, they're not that effective when they're doing it in a second or third language, and we would not be able to accomplish or achieve anything in that local language.
It is so true.
That comparison is already skewed. Which was the what from those two foreign countries that you mentioned that you lived and worked in? What were some of the hardest things to get used to or acclimatized to?
I think it's often for me the norms, the rituals, and the environment. It's it's how things are done that I found the most challenging. And if I can just sort of bring it to life, maybe in extremes, just to sort of help. But, you know, North American, Silicon Valley, kind of everything's about just go, 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 make it happen, fail fast. Mm-hmm. So the mindset is that. So this notion of planning and pausing and, you know, no, we're just going, and it doesn't matter if it fit right. Okay, so I'm on the hamster wheel. Right, I get it. Right, I've got to figure that out. And then moving to kind of South Mediterranean, there's a different rhythm. Things are a bit more methodical, a bit more thoughtful. You know, there is a hierarchy to things. And again, I'm being intentional with the extremes. It would be unfair to say that is everything. There are always variants of these things, but just to kind of bring it to life. So those observations for me meant that I had to kind of balance that what that looks like. And then, of course, I've operated with teams in the Far East as well, and again, it's different again, but there are some polarizing extremes that we could lean into. But I find it's about us being patient to observe. I do journal an awful lot now,
mm-hmm.
and I find that helps me go through that process of deciphering the cultural code. There's a wonderful book around it, right? That we can just sort of help us navigate it. But I definitely don't find it easy. It's not something that came natural to me at all. I've had to kind of adapt as my career has given me those opportunities to do so. But those extremes, I hope, kind of bring it to life. But I just want to repeat, then, not everybody is like that, but I find those are the organizations I've worked with.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think sometimes the English-speaking countries, we assume that because the language is the same, that culturally also it's going to be very easy. Whereas and culturally, in some aspects, yes, very similar, but in some aspects, very different. And then there's other countries which don't share the same language and are maybe geographically much further away, but in some aspects, culturally, very similar. And then in some aspects, very different. I think that's also we're not in boxes. And I think mm-hmm. that only from kind of experiencing that, do you realize, oh no, there are some really similar things in this very foreign and different culture to mine, which actually are very similar and we can use as currency to build a relationship through. I think, and I've said this before in previous episodes, I think that with tools like video conferencing, that we feel much more connected with people anywhere in the world than perhaps we really are. I think mm-hmm. we're kind of tricked into feeling fully connected. We're anybody anywhere in the world is available on a video call and we're there. But that doesn't mean just because we can connect and speak to them so easily that we're going to be able to work together effectively.
Yeah, right. So we're connected more, but doesn't necessarily mean we know each other.
For sure.
Yeah, that's lovely. For sure. Yeah, nice.
Have you? I'm interested whether you have worked in. So I think what we've been talking about now a little bit is working with teams in one place and then maybe teams in another place. What about teams which are a very diverse mix of cultures? So within one team, so it's a functioning team, but lots of different cultural backgrounds and variety within a team. How do you approach that?
Yeah, I think it's the same process. I kind of lean into the human-centered design method. So when I've had diverse teams in the past, again, culturally, but also capability, right? And then the third dimension is the skill, the discipline. So I find we're often working now in squads or some sort of project team with multi disciplines, mm-hmm. and we all come at it from different lenses. So there's the cultural side, there's my lived experiences, then there's my actual work skill and experience lens. And I think our role as leaders, or even as project leaders, if you come down, is to open up that lens, open up the lenses, give everybody the opportunity, and then work towards a clarification. So work and an alignment around what we all see and mean. And I think it's then you can kind of build your own team lexicon, your own team definitions,
mm-hmm.
but it's developed together. I think that's the key thing, because we all want each other's, we should all value the lens. It's an experience I don't have. It's a skill I don't have. So I want to learn and observe. Together, we come together and create something extremely meaningful.
Yep.
That's what I think it's about. Because if we can't align, if we can't define, you can bet your bottom dollar customers are fragmented, customers can't yep. understand. If we're influencing transformation and change in the business, they can't align. So it's about getting that alignment, definement, and then probably a continuity in how we all operate. Those are the things for me.
Okay.
And again, this is the skill. It's about the cultural fluency with design, with human-centered design. It's about the work to be done is changing, and the value of the work is changing. So, for example, that time it takes to do the design is meaningful work, but it hasn't necessarily produced the business KPI that we want at that moment. But it's still meaningful because downstream, it will positively impact the business KPI.
Right. Yeah. It's a little bit of investment now to increase the chance of success later on. But it does lead me to my immediate follow-up question is, what are some of the things you do to increase the speed of that alignment and cohesion?
So a lot of workshop design, I think workshop design, group thinking, and then being a really good facilitator. I think that's a skill that we could all do with. You know, facilitating group conversations. And, you know, you mentioned about digital tools. They're kind of leaning into this now. We can do whiteboarding. We can do, you know, facilitation digitally now, which I think really helps. That will accelerate. If we do comms to, so traditional, down over or into, I think that is a method, but it's slower. I think the acceleration is about coming together, working it out together,
mm-hmm.
and then
mm-hmm.
documentation, repetition, defining things, and then forming the habit around that over time. So once we've defined a language, once we've agreed on something, we've now got to adopt that language and build the muscle around it. So I think it's the facilitation of the conversations, it's the process of input, it's the process of documentation as output, and then we all align to an outcome, and then in between that it's actions. Right, these are the things we now need to do based on these principles we've made. So I think it's mm-hmm. I think that's a really good strategy for acceleration of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also about a balance between that and patience. So speed and patience. When we recognize we don't have the alignment, I think we've got to go backwards. Go back to that design. What did we miss? What are we not comfortable with? And then going. And of course, the overarching of that is just an environment of psychological safety. You know, that would be the buzzword, right? But I think the reality is just that people feel safe to share. People feel safe to contribute. And us as leaders and facilitators need to create that environment. And it probably starts with us. So we've got to show vulnerability. We've got to be exposed. Because that creates the space that we can all be exposed to. We can all be vulnerable. And then we can share. So a couple Definitely. Of things. But yeah, in a yeah. nutshell, I think it's good facilitation. Good group thinking, input, safe space, definition, action, reflection. Does it make an impact? Are we moving?
I hope that everybody has enjoyed this conversation, and hopefully it can be food to start some new conversations. If people would like to reach out to you and maybe get in touch, what would be the best way for them to LinkedIn. Do that?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah, all my content's on there. My walk and talks I distribute on LinkedIn, and there's wonderful insights there from all my companions, who I'm incredibly grateful for taking me on a walk. They can connect on here.
Perfect. And, yeah, well, we'll share those links, and sounds like we also need to look at collaborating on a walk and talk in the future. But
oh, Gordon, I'd love that so much, especially now you're in the UK. I'd love that. Let's do it.
Yeah. Now we're relatively close. John, thank you so much for being the guest today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Cheerio.
And thanks everybody for watching and listening to this episode. It's been another great Get Stuff Done with John Stanners. And remember, everybody, let's get stuff done.
Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening, as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week, because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.